And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is your RBLR Rays podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, and I'm here with a very special guest. So happy to have him back. Ben, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I just got back from Boston. Great this time of the year. Went up to Salem. Had to get an exorcism. I think most of it's out. It's a great city, honestly. Unfortunately, it's a great city. So,
yeah, they're probably pretty happy up there considering the Yankees just embarrassed themselves in the World Series. I'm sure they're all in a pretty good mood, generally speaking, up there.
Yeah, it's great to not be a Yankees fan right now. Gerrit Cole opted out of his contract. Mm-hmm. I don't think he had to make that decision until Monday or Tuesday. We're recording on what, Saturday? Yeah, today's Saturday right now. So interesting to do that. So
you think I thought the same thing because like you're starting to see like the opt-ins. Obviously, we're going to talk about Belo in a minute, but like you're starting to see the opt-ins and some of that kind of stuff start to happen. Seemed a little odd that the Yankees elected not to pick up the option for Rizzo, and then immediately, like almost like maybe a couple hours later, Cole doesn't pick up his option to stay with the team. Very interesting to see what the dynamics are going to look like for them. Because the big question for them is, what will Soto stay or not? I feel like if they win the World Series, maybe the tenor around that is different. But after losing, especially the way they lost, you got to wonder what, you know, Juan Soto is thinking right now as he's looking at maybe one of the biggest free agencies since last year, when with the biggest free agency ever. But like it's a little bit rough because you would normally say it's going to be the biggest free agency ever, but we just had that with Shohei. So, but it's going to be a massive market for him. So it'll be interesting to see the way that he handles that, especially if for whatever reason Cole does leave, you got to wonder what is going through his head as he's trying to figure out where he wants to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to say a big congratulations to the several former Rays who would now have a World Series ring with the Dodgers. Kevin Kiermaier, Tyler Glasnow, Brent Honeywell. Really happy for him. He ended up having a great. Yep. Right.
Kevin Kiermaier, stick and poke.
Yep.
39 cowboy hat.
It was really cool to see his interview after the World Series to see him get that. What a great way for him to go out. To be able to go out with a ring to add to his impressive hardware case. Is the KK to the Hall of Fame chant over? I don't know that he's done enough if his career ends now. Do you think he has any shot to like backdoor it like on his like ninth time on the ballot?
Of course. No, not really. The Rays Hall of Fame, yes. He's first ballot Rays Hall of Famer. Let's get that number retired as soon as possible. I don't think anybody really wants it, though, anyways. So.
No. I couldn't imagine ever seeing anybody else at 39 in a Rays uniform. I don't think I could ever imagine it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, at this point, you know, with all the injuries and just the missed time, like, it's, you know, probably not going to happen. But I think there's some kind of place in Cooperstown for, like, the best defensive player. The at least defensive outfielder since Andrew Jones. So Andrelton Simmons is also up there for sure, but it's like him and KK like ran the league for a decade.
Yeah. Well, and you wonder like if I wonder if Andrew Jones had gotten into the Hall of Fame a little easier. Like he had to kind of fight to get in, which I thought was ridiculous. Yeah. I thought he was a no doubt, but he kind of had to fight to get in. I wonder if he had gotten it a little easier, if maybe there's a different conversation, because I mean, there was almost no contest that he was the best defensive player for a good stretch of years there. And that is when you talk about being in the Hall of Fame, I feel like that conversation begins and ends with, were you ever the best at what you did for any extended period of time? And while he wasn't the best offensive center fielder, really probably at any point in his career, he was absolutely the best defensive center fielder for an extended period of time. So you know, he's probably more of a Hall of really, really good than a Hall of Fame person, but you cannot deny that he is a Hall of Fame defensive talent, like no question.
Yeah, I feel like every time I'm on here, there's like at least a minute or two where we're like, yeah, KK is great. I just kind of bring that with me, but I'll take it. I'll take any chance I can to plug that.
I think we should do that every podcast because KK is great. And he's the only Rays jersey I own is a KK jersey. We had this conversation a couple weeks ago, but I will wear that jersey forever because it doesn't matter to me that he's not on the team or he left the team towards the end of his career. Cause I will always have all of those moments, the jump man at the wall in 2019. I'll always have those moments. So congrats to him. Good luck to him in retirement, whatever he does. It'd be interesting to see if he tries to go the coaching route or something down the road or whatever he decides to do. But a career well spent for him. Unfortunate that Tyler got hurt before the playoffs, so he wasn't really able to make much of a mark on the postseason run. But there's no reason why this Dodgers team won't be back in the playoffs soon. So I would love to still watch him shine in the World Series sometime in the future. But wasn't this year, but really happy for him to get the World Series ring.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Well, the big news that we are here to discuss along with a couple other we've decided that we were not that we're being negative on purpose, but we've had some less than fun conversations around the Rays because it was a less than fun season overall. And we wanted to take some time this episode to talk about some of the things that we really enjoyed about this season. That's what we're going to do in the back half of the episode. But before we get there, we got to talk about Brandon Lau. The Rays picked up his option for $10.5 million for this year. The way that Eric Neander talked about it, it was a no-brainer. That was kind of the verbiage that he was using before the option was actually picked up. They seemed pretty confident about it. Wasn't a huge surprise to me that the option was picked up. Do you believe them picking up the option was the right move?
Yeah, I mean, if they think it's the right move, it's probably the right move. It's definitely a really pricey move. I'm not surprised that they picked it up, but like, he's more likely than not going to get paid like $100,000 per game played. Mm-hmm. If he wouldn't have even eclipsed 100 this season if he didn't play through like several injuries, including mm-hmm. I think it was a broken toe, right?
Yeah.
So, at the end. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many players, not position players, the Rays have had in their franchise history where they're paying $100,000 per game for a player, but we might see that this year. And yeah, there's no doubt he's still a good hitter. He's productive. He might be the best version of himself he's ever been, but the injuries are still a thing. And yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I think the thing with Brandon Lau that we've all – it's so hard to get his 2021 season out of your mind when you look to evaluate him. Because when you evaluate him, he's my favorite player on the team. I'll make no bones about it. I love Brandon Lau. But it's so hard to like forget about that season. But it's the only season he's really been completely healthy the entire time. And that's the tantalizing thing about Brandon Lau is the one time he's been healthy, he was an MVP candidate. And he just hasn't been healthy since then. And there's no real evidence that he's going to be healthy next year. I wouldn't put money, I'm not a betting man, but I wouldn't put money on him playing more than 100 games. I think he's going to play right around 95 to 100, maybe 105 games is what his value is. I don't have a problem with it personally. I did some looking around just because I was curious. He will be the 10th highest paid second baseman next year. Behind a bunch of guys who are worse than him, and then Ketel Marte, Semien, and Altuve are the only ones that I think are actually better than him that are paid more than he is. But it's inarguable that he's getting paid a lot per game because of his injury history, and you can't really make an argument that he's going to play more than that. I think he's still one of the top, you know, when he went healthy and on the field, he's one of the top 10 second basemen in baseball, and he's probably the best hitter tied with Yandy on the Rays right now. But with the injuries, you never really know what you're going to get. If you get a good, like, I think the best thing you can hope for, honestly, with him is that you just get a good, like, maybe 2-month period in the season where he's healthy, where he can play a bunch of games and get some momentum going, provide some lineup protection for some of the younger guys. And because when he's healthy and firing on all cylinders, he's an elite hitter. And if he can just be that for a nice stretch of the season and provide some value there and get, you know, some lineup protection going for some of the younger guys, I think that's a really valuable role for him. I don't have a problem with the Rays picking up the option at all. I'm really happy he's back. I do wonder what the Rays picking up the option means for Yandy Diaz. He is the, let me see if I had it here a second ago. He is the second highest paid now player on the Rays is Yandy Diaz. He's getting $10 million next year, just right behind Brandon Lau. So it'll be interesting to see how the Rays handle having two $10 million guys on the roster, or if that is how we open the 2025 season. That kind of leads me to my next question is they picked up his option, and that would seem to indicate, based on the way they're talking about him, seems to indicate that he's going to stay with the team. Do you think there's any chance he does not open as a Tampa Bay Ray on opening day 2025?
No, I think he'll do it. I mean, maybe it's on the injured list, but I think he'll be a member of the organization for whatever that's worth. I mean, like he's a good player when he's healthy, and I think they'll be able to manage him being healthy for the most part. He currently has the second most starts in franchise history at second base with 441 behind Ben Zobrist at 485. Do you think he'll catch or pass Zobrist this season with starting at second base?
I mean, what's the difference there? Like 40 games?
Yeah. Do you think he'll play 40 games in the field this season?
Yeah. I think he'll play 40 games. I think he'll play 40 games in the field. I do. The only way he doesn't is if for some reason they trade Yandy Diaz and decide to play Bilal at first. I think he'll do it because he's still like acceptable at second base. And I mean, the other guys who play second base that the Rays could look to put at second instead of him play other positions. I'm not really jazzed about seeing Aranda at second base. He'd be fine, whatever. Palacios is good, but he can play the outfield too. That's probably where he'll get most of his starts, I would think. And then you've got a couple other middle infield guys, but I think they can all play third baseman or third base or short. So I would say, yeah, he'll get those 40 starts and he'll have a most in Rays history. We talked a while ago. I don't know where he is now on the all time Rays home run list. I'm not sure if he's
seventh or eighth, maybe. I'm not 100% sure though. I saw something about it earlier.
Yeah. He's got a bit of a ways to go there. I thought maybe a few years ago, if he could stay like, I think maybe 2022, maybe after the 2022 season, I was kind of in the mindset that, you know, maybe if 2022 was the aberration that he got back to being his healthy 2021 self in 2023 and beyond, he could maybe challenge for that. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he stays with the team after this year, if he could challenge for that home run record. I'm probably leaning towards not. But it'll be nice for him to have a piece of Rays history being the second baseman with the most starts if he ends up doing that, which I think he will.
Yeah, I mean, to keep him healthy, he's going to have to play a lot less. However, the Rays might not be playing on turf as much, so that might kind of help him. Yeah. We'll have to see. It'll be interesting. What WAR number would you want him to put up to justify the $10.5 million price tag?
So this last What'd season he last season he put up what he put up 2.2. If he could get to 2 WAR, I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty good with that. I think most people value a win above replacement for F WAR at around 5 to 7 million. I think is roughly the value. So I mean, if he puts up 2 F WAR, I'm good with that. I like because and part of the reason why I'm good with that is because if you remove Bilal from the team, Yandy's really your only other veteran hitter on the team if you remove him. So I'm kind of fine. And I mean, I think he's I think what has happened with Brandon Lau now is when you look across the Rays roster, you see a lot of guys that are being paid less than what they would be worth on the open market. Like the one that stuck out to me earlier, I was looking at Zach Littell. He's getting 1.8 right now, and he put up 2.3 F4 last season. So they're getting a WAR per million, which is a crazy deal for a starting pitcher. And same thing with Pepiot. He put up like 1.9, and he's getting less than a million a year. So like that's kind of what the Rays, that's the way they operate generally. When you look at a guy like Brandon Lau, and kind of the same thing with Yandy, although I think if he is healthy, or I mean, I don't really know what was going on with him this season. It wasn't really health. But if he plays to what we expect him to play, both of those guys are instead of getting paid like less than their value, which is kind of the Rays way of doing things, they're probably getting paid more closely to their league average value. I think as long as you've only got a few of those guys, if we're operating under the assumption of certain salary cap limitations just because of the way the Rays operate, then I think it's fine to have a few of those guys, especially when they're not albatrosses. It's not like they're, you know, Anthony Rendon, no offense, were going out there and they're not producing, they're not productive. They are providing value, both of them. They're just more appropriately compensated relative to the market, as opposed to being, I don't want to say undercompensated, but instead of the Rays getting a deal on them because they're young and under long-term contract, like arbitration.
Okay, yeah. I was just looking into it. He played 53 games at second base last year. That's way less than I thought.
That is way less than I thought. Okay, well, I may have to
reassess my So does he play 44 in 2025? That's tight. I don't know. That's really tight. Because like to keep him healthy, he's going to need more DH days, maybe more first base days. That's going to be a close one. That would be a fun betting line if a good poll for the RBLR Rays Twitter.
That would be a good
poll. Does Brandon Lau play over under 45 starts? That's because it's like the starts thing with Cypress. So 45 starts at second base. I'd take the under, and I'm not a betting man, but I would take the under. That feels like it's pretty easy money.
The only scenario where I think, like, I mean, I think there's scenarios where he could hit it, but I do wonder, I don't know how much they care. I don't know how much he cares or how much anybody else cares about that number. I wonder if maybe if they get to like the end of the season and they are either like, you know, they're either firmly in a playoff spot or they're out of contention for whatever reason, if they maybe just give him a couple starts there just to make sure that he gets the number and then substitute him somewhere else in the infield later. I don't know. But it'd be interesting to see. I don't know how much they care about those kinds of numbers. But if we're just talking about like optimizing their lineup and optimizing him, his value, especially after you said that he only played 53 games last season starting.
Yeah, 53 starts at second.
I'm going to have
that's to, like, with the injuries that he played through too. So it's like, if he doesn't play through injuries, he's not hitting over 50 games there. That's for sure.
I'm going to say that's tough. We'll throw a poll up on RBLR Twitter or something to see what you think. If you have an opinion on that, let us know. We're really grateful. If you're out there watching us live, thank you so much for doing us this huge favor and joining us. We're so excited to have you here. We're going to be going all off season long. We've got lots to talk about. We're going to be doing player reviews. We're going to be talking about kind of all the offseason topics of who's going to be on the roster, who's going to be off the roster. We'll occasionally talk about what else is going on in Major League Baseball, especially in the AL East, as there's going to be some big news all throughout the offseason. If you're watching us for the first time, thank you so much. If you're a returning listener, we love to have you back. If you could do us a massive favor and hit the like button. And if you really want to do us an even huger favor, follow us on the socials or subscribe if you're on YouTube. That'll not only do us a huge favor, but it'll do yourself a huge favor because you'll know whenever we're doing these live shows or whenever we're doing any other fun stuff on the socials or on YouTube. So do yourself a huge favor. Follow us, subscribe, like. We appreciate all of you. We have had a bit of a rough beginning to the off season, because as we've been kind of looking back at the season that was, especially watching the postseason unfold, it's been kind of hard because we were in the postseason for so many years in a row, and then now we're out of it. It's been a bit hard for us, at least for me as a Rays fan, to watch that. So now that we've reflected on that a little bit, we'd like to take kind of a minute here and talk about some of the really positive things that happened this year. Because as much as we didn't fulfill maybe our preseason goals, I'm not sure what the Rays preseason goals were exactly, but I'm quite confident making the playoffs was one of them. So you don't fulfill that goal.
They said they wanted to win a World Series like that. Yes. They said they wanted to win that. So
that's the goal. Didn't work out. But you know what? It only works out for one team every year. So, you know, it is what it is. It's unfortunate. It wasn't the season that any of us wanted. That being said, this was not a lost season. There were lots of really good things that happened at the major league level, at the minor league level, all across Rays baseball. There were good things that happened. So we just want to take a minute to talk about a couple things that we really, really enjoyed this season, even though we didn't have the best outcome for the team. So, Ben, what is one of the things you were the most excited about, the things you enjoyed watching the most this race season?
I mean, I feel like starting at the major leagues would be most appropriate here because that's the most immediate thing. Just the first and foremost, like above anything else, with like how the players performed or how they're going to perform, we've got Christopher Morel, Jose Siri, Junior Caminero, and Richie Palacios all just having so much fun every single day and jumping up and down in circles and screaming and yelling and throwing things and food and taking pictures. And that's awesome. Like no matter where they play this season, like they're going to have fun. And that's, I've learned that that's so much more important than anything else. So it's really great that they're going to have fun. I have other stuff too, but that's like, that's my favorite part for sure.
Well, and like that is, it's a really good point, because when you're watching games in and games out, especially if the results aren't quite what you would like, it can be, depending, there's been teams that I've watched, or not necessarily the Rays, but the teams that I've watched that are having rough seasons, and you just watch the dugout and it's like dead in there. It was never dead in the Rays dugout, even when things weren't going the right way. You had Jose Siri, Morel when he came over. You have guys having a lot of fun. And that makes such a big difference, I feel like, especially because those guys are building the future of this team. Like, Siri, we're not sure. Morel, we're not sure. We'll see, you know, how long they're with the team. But they're definitely going to be around next season and a big part of the plan going into next season. So that's a group that you want to gel, that you want to be excited to play with one another and be having fun, because they're going to be seeing a lot of each other. So to see them building that chemistry this year, you got to think that's something that's going to carry over into next year and be, like you're saying, a lot of fun wherever they play. So that's absolutely something that every Rays fan can look forward to, not only if you watch back over any of this season, but looking forward to next year. You got guys that love playing baseball together. And even if we don't see the immediate dividends for them, you know, there's some development work to do with some of those guys, but you're going to see the camaraderie there. That is going to be worth some wins down the line. The camaraderie that this team has and the togetherness that the team has, it's going to be worth it down the line.
Yeah, I mean, you're traveling all over the country for what, like 6 or 7 months with your friends, eating snacks in the dugout. Like, that's most of your time in the game. Like, you're not really doing anything, so you might as well have people that are really cool to be around when you're sitting there eating snacks and throwing stuff at each other. Like, just have fun.
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me, kind of in that vein, that I was, you know, that I enjoyed about the season was, this team never gave up, man. Like, I mean, it didn't go, like, we went to Detroit with a chance, man, with 6 games left in the season. If that series goes differently, who knows what happens? Maybe they go to the wild card and get swept out of it. But, like, they went to Detroit with a shot to get to the postseason with 6 games left to go. There's only so much, you know, you could ask for more. But, like, this team fought all the way to the end. They could have very easily packed it in at multiple times throughout the year. They did not. They never packed it in. They never gave up. The pitching staff fought every inning. The hitters out there were trying their hardest, even if they were getting thrown out occasionally because of overaggression. Like, they were out there fighting every single game. And I have a tremendous respect for not only those players, but the job that Kevin Cash did as the manager to keep this team together, to continue to push them forward, to continue to get that fight out of them every single game. It's admirable. And that's the kind of, you know, I've never been a Kevin Cash hater. I've always been a massive Kevin Cash supporter. But a season like this is why I'm a huge supporter of his. Because even when you're not getting the performances you want, this team sticks together. They fight to the bitter end of the season. Immense respect for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I liked at the major league level was kind of pretty unexpected. Was Logan Driscoll kind of establishing himself a bit at the end there? He's never really been like that dude with the glove and the framing like that. But I guess I'll get the more exact thing that I wanted to say here. It's in my notes app. So we had the second highest framing strike rate in the league since in the second half, which is pretty cool because the umpires usually get a lot better as the season goes on. We see that every year. They get better every year, but like they're better in September than they are in April. So that's pretty cool. If we just look at the best framing strike rates from the entire season, he's actually the best in the league, tied with, I think he was just ahead of Patrick Bailey. So, I mean, like, but the umpires are bad in the beginning. So it doesn't, you know, I don't want to, it's not fair to measure that completely, but second half, he was phenomenal. Almost 53%. Sub 1.9 pop time, just that's plus, that's amazing. And he actually had the best strikeout to walk ratio among catchers in the league. So smaller sample there, but He was really, really good back there with the glove, and a lot of signs point to the way that he was able to work with the pitcher so successfully and kind of be on the same page. Like the tempo was really good. If you're watching the games, like it was quick, it was slow if the pitchers wanted to be slow, but he knows the staff so well. It was a nice contrast to see how he worked with the staff compared to how some of the other catchers have in the past. But it was surprising because he's never been that guy, but he showed it at the major. So I don't think he'll be the 53% framing strike rate guy next year, but it'll be 50%, and that's good for number two catcher with the sub 1.9 pop time. Like I'll take that every day, and he's a lefty too. So you compare him with Dominic Keegan someday. I think Keegan might be a lefty. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But basically, Driscoll's emerged as a nice number two. I definitely want to see more of him this year.
Yeah, the catching position is a weird one right now because we've got Rortved under contract, so they could keep him and roll with him if they wanted to. I wouldn't be super jazzed if that's the route they went, especially when you look at Driscoll. Everything you're talking about with him providing that value defensively, them both being lefty kind of makes it tough to keep them both on the roster at the same time. You'd like to have that righty-lefty if you could. I feel like the catching position is kind of wide open for 2025. I really have no, like, I don't have any sense for who's going to be starting opening day. I don't know what's going on with Rene Pinto. I don't know why they just sent Alex Jackson away as well. Like, the Rays catching situation in 2024 was a complete enigma to me. I don't know that I'll ever understand it. I would read a book about whatever happened with the 2024 Rays catching staff. It is very weird. I don't know who's going to be starting in 2025, but it is cool to see guys like that because you don't know how much longer the kind of things that Logan Driscoll did this year, how much longer that's going to matter for going forward with you know, automatic balls and strikes starting to slowly inch its way up to the major leagues. So if you like watching a well-caught game, enjoy it while you can, guys, because a well-framed, all that stuff, I enjoy that. It's fun to watch that kind of stuff. Enjoy it while you can, guys, because you may not have it for much longer.
Yeah, I don't want ABS. I don't want a challenge system, honestly. I used to want it because I was mad that it was hurting the players I liked. But
yeah,
it's the most fun part of the game for me is how the catchers work. It's so interesting. So I really hope they keep it around. But if they don't, he's still, you know, he's got the pop time. He's got the leadership. And he's definitely got the ability to work with the staff that he might be the best option. You know, if we were to go to ABS next season, it's not going to happen. I think like 2026 or 2027, they might have it in some capacity, but next year it's still, we get to keep watching some art. So I'm excited for that.
Yep. Speaking of art, I enjoyed watching some of the pitchers that the Rays were, we sat at the beginning of the season and we said, these guys have to step up or this team is going to be in trouble because of injuries to guys like Jeffrey Springs, who eventually came back, Drew Rasmussen, Shane McClanahan. There's a couple of guys that we looked at and said, we need them to step up. And the one that I am the most excited about, and I think we've talked a lot about Zach Littell on this show, as we should, but Ryan Pepiot, the guy brought in to replace Tyler Glasnow, I could not have been more ecstatic with his season. Ends up pitching to a 3.6 ERA, 1.9 F4. This guy is not going to be a free agent until 2029, guys. He's still got an option left. He's making $750,000 a year right now. And the dude is providing incredible production. He also pitched his most innings ever in a season this last season at 130. His previous high was like 128, and that was in some minors, mostly minors, and then some MLB. So he pitched 130 major league innings last year. Massive for his development to get those innings logged at the major league level. Be interesting to see what he does next year. Maybe they try to, you know, get him closer to 150 or above. We'll see what they do with him. But to watch him develop, to watch him, you know, go. He was at the beginning of the season, he was kind of a good start, bad start, good start, bad start, good start, bad start. And then he started to develop a little more consistency as the season went along. Kind of really, really was getting into his stride even more towards the end of the season. I am so excited to see what his development continues to look like. He's a guy that could be a top, you know, three or even a top two guy in your staff in the future. And it's a loaded staff on this team. So it'll be great to see him next year, another year of development. But he was one of my he was a must watch start. I mean, I'm watching every Rays game anyway, but he was a must watch start for me. I loved watching him pitch.
Yeah, he definitely looks like a number three, maybe a number two starter if he's got, if he's feeling good that day. I was really impressed with how well he took care of his body. Aside from the weird spider bite infection thing that he didn't even get superpowers for. Oh, sorry, I kicked my table. He was really healthy. He looked pretty strong all year. And again, aside from the spider bite thing that made him miss some time, which he did have, I think, a bit of a velo drop, but nothing. You know, there's no arm concerns as of right now. So fingers crossed. I know saying that now might scare some people, but that's I'm not superstitious. So that's not it doesn't mean anything to me.
Just knocking on wood there in the meantime. I think having just another guy in the chamber, when you look at this team, you're going to have next year several guys that could be a one when healthy. I mean, Shane's not going to be the one that we know him as next year. He's going to be I don't know that either of them are. Well, Shane McClanahan could be a one eventually when he gets back fully healthy. Neither one is a one next year, I don't think. I think Jeffrey Springs is probably the one. We could have a whole discussion about that. But I don't think Shane Baz is ready to be a one yet either. But you could disagree with me on that. But I think he projects more of a 2-3. He could be a one. I don't know. There's a lot of his career left to happen. But next year, I wouldn't put him as a one.
No, I don't know. It's tough to say if the stuff will ever like fully come back. It was really good last year, but it wasn't quite like his. It wasn't quite like it was a couple of years ago. So we'll see. It depends. Everybody's different. But the command being as okay as it was pretty cool and surprising. Especially coming right off of Tommy John like that. So good for him.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what Shane McClanahan looks like coming back. It was good to see him starting to throw a little bit towards the end of the year. I'm glad they didn't try to rush him back or any nonsense towards the end of the season. It was good that he was able to kind of continue to take this full season to rehab and be hopefully ready for opening day 2025. Be interested to see what he does. But to have a guy, but to have Shane Baz, to have Shane McClanahan, to have Jeffrey Springs, to have Zach Littell and Ryan Pepiot on the same staff, you've got a lot of really high quality pitching there. And it'll be interesting to see how they all develop together as a staff over the next year or two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So there are good things happening at the major league level. The one other one that I wanted to throw in there is Aranda coming up and finally starting to live up to his potential a little bit as a hitter. He came up and finally, and you know, we were for so long, we just said, man, if he can just get some of the momentum that he has at the minor leagues where he's crushing the baseball and bring that up with him to the majors. And we finally started to see that at the end of last year. Made me really excited for 2025 with him. That was kind of like the very, even though it was frustrating to watch the end of the year because we didn't end up making the playoffs, so fun to watch him come up and finally have the staying power that we were looking for from an offensive perspective at the major league level. Really excited to see what he ends up looking like in 2025.
Yeah, him and Mead showed some really nice adjustments. I think they're actually, I know that they're both fully ready for a major league job. Full-time, ready to go rip the Band-Aid off. I don't think the at-bats will be available for them because of Brandon Lau, which is great. Like, that's awesome. But they're both 100% ready. So, fully established major leaguers are hard to come by. And I think those guys – I mean, I wouldn't say they're fully established, but they're fully ready to establish themselves. They both really leaned into what they do well. Aranda's got a phenomenal eye. And really smart, and he knows when to attack and when to just kind of foul things off. Curtis Mead, excellent bat-to-ball skills. He leaned into that. Really high foul ball rate, and that's on purpose. He's, you know, he likes to kind of just put the ball off to the side until he gets one he can kind of smoke into that left-center gap. So I love the approach for both of them. Skill sets are there. Adjustments to major league velocity are there. So I'm ready for them next year for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about what we were talking about a little bit earlier about Brandon Lau needing some time either to DH or to, maybe being, you know, there's going to be some time where he's not playing, he's going to be hurt or whatever. Those guys are absolutely going to get some opportunities, and it'll be interesting to see how they do in those opportunities, maybe which, if either of them start, you know, more consistently, if they can work themselves into a role, especially if Yandy for some reason doesn't end up coming back. You could see them getting some opportunities, and I hope that they make the most of them, because I don't know if Brandon Lau is going to be on this team in 2026. So if they're able to kind of take advantage of those opportunities when they come, we really could see them kind of, like you're talking about, they're major league ready, but maybe start to establish themselves and take that starting second baseman role for themselves when we start to look towards 2026 for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's second base, so it's not like really up the middle, but it's right. Still important, like, you know, starting with the catcher that we talked about, Driscoll, and then the pitching staff, second base, super important. Moving over to the shortstop side, Carson Williams, I know that he didn't play in the majors this year, but he made some massive strides in his bat to ball skills. He went from well below average to just below average in the contact department, and that's, you know, he's gonna be a great major leaguer for a long time just because of that defense and the power. But if he can be a slightly better than league average hitter with that, like, yeah, almost 80 grade defense, you're looking at a 3-4, maybe a couple 5 more peak seasons with him, and just going to be an integral part of the team. He's a really great athlete, great baseball player. Really excited about the strides that he made this year.
Yeah, I think when, you know, it'd be really easy to get really negative going forward when you're talking about shortstop if you didn't have a guy like him there, considering who's no longer on the team at that position. But knowing that you have a guy like Carson Williams in the running who is working his way up, making those kinds of strides in the minors, and is ready for a maybe cup of coffee at the end of 25, maybe challenging for a roster spot in 2026. Really exciting, looking to the future. I cannot wait to see him in a Devil Rays uniform.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the international tournament that's going on pretty soon, I think it starts like in a week, where it's like the U.S. versus Mexico, or they're playing a bunch of games all over. Carson Williams and Chandler Simpson are both on that team, and I did want to touch on Simpson a little bit too.
Yeah.
The type of pitching they're going to see is, like, you know, you're going to see your guys that throw hard occasionally, but you're going to see the guys that know how to pitch.
Yeah.
He didn't really see that in Double A, so that's going to be an interesting test for him. He's mostly just saw, like, the grip it and rip it guys. Triple A is where you're going to see, you know, still some guys with really good stuff who throw hard, but you really see the pitchability guys. And I think depending on how he does in this tournament, you know, with those adjustments and obviously his health, because he's played a lot of baseball this year, I don't think it would happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was challenging for an opening day roster spot in 2025. Like, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I mean, I'd be shocked, but I wouldn't be surprised, if that makes sense. Like, he's getting, you know, these essentially triple A reps this winter. And, you know, we know the defense is going to play at the majors.
Yeah.
If he's healthy and he looks good and he's able to, you know, continue the adjustments he made against double A pitching, which, you know, he played in the most pitcher friendly league in all the minor leagues, and he, you know, showed out. I think it's a possibility to see him in 2025. I have no other reason to think that other than he's playing against triple A pitching in the winter here.
Yeah.
When he already played a ton of baseball, why are they giving him these extra reps? He doesn't have to showcase anything. Like, he's going to be on the 40-man roster when he needs to be. Like, there's nothing. He doesn't need to go out and prove anything against, you know, certain competition. Like, he's shown everything he needs to show. Like, now it's just about getting the reps at the AAA level and then eventually adjusting to velo at the major league level, which, you know, everybody goes through that. But the up-the-middle defense is a priority for the Rays, and he's maybe the best in the – actually, he is the best in the organization at that.
So. Better than Taylor Walls.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Taylor Walls. Yeah, never mind. I mean, Taylor Walls can do it, but, like, imagine, like, you know, Taylor Walls – almost Taylor Walls-level defense with an above-league average bat and some power. Like, that.
You don't have to say it anymore. You don't have to say a word more.
We've had a shortstop almost like that before, and, you know, we saw the kind of war totals he was putting up. So I mean, it's he's not like a once in a lifetime prospect, but that's a really, really good above average major leaguer, like 3 to 4 win seasons easy. And, you know, I'm excited about Carson Williams.
Do you think he could provide close to, if not the same value that like Willy Adames is providing now?
Actually, that's a really good comp for him is Willy Adames.
Because sure. The way you're just like, as you were just talking to
but me, better defense. I think he's a better defender for sure.
Because like you were just telling me as we're talking about him and you talking about him improving a little bit of the contact, but he's got the power in the defense. I'm like, he's just, it sounds a lot like Willy Adames. And Willy Adames is going to get $200 million in about 6 weeks here or maybe less.
Well, maybe not. Like, what if he's like, I really like the Rays. I don't have to worry about the LED lights at the Trop anymore. Like that was
it's his so thing. True. Like,
he couldn't see. That's totally fair. But like, that's what crazy. If he's, you know, oh, we're getting breaking news. The Rowdies scored a goal.
Oh, who scored?
The Rowdies scored. They've scored. They're beating Detroit now. Nice. It's in the playoffs, I believe. So
20 nice minutes
early Rowdy lead strike. There.
Nice.
All right. Sorry if anybody thought I was going to break some news about Willy Adames.
Cal Jennings, who else?
Yeah. But anyways, moving on to that, the center field position, staying up the middle here, because mm-hmm. that's the most impactful, most impactful kind of players. Chandler Simpson really showed some phenomenal improvements playing center field. I think he can hold it down there. I don't think he's going to be on the opening day roster in 2025, mm-hmm. but he's going to play in the majors, I think, this year. He's also going to that international tournament where, again, he showed everything he's needed to show against the competition that he's been facing. He needs to get those reps against the pitchability guys. He's just going to continue to hit ground balls to the left side and get on base. And that's, you know, I don't want to see, I mean, he did improve his exit velos a little bit. So like, he's not like a complete noodle, but it's still like 25 pop, probably 20 actually, but he doesn't want to hit home runs. He doesn't want to hit fly balls. He wants to hit low line drives. And he's going to, he could provide value right now at the majors. I don't think he's ready. But you know, he's someone who could use this opportunity with the international play to kind of accelerate his timeline, similar to Carson Williams, not as much of an acceleration because center field doesn't really have as much of a need at the majors right now.
Right.
But he's going to be playing this winter too. So I'm excited about that. I also got to look at who's playing winter ball in Australia. I know Coleman Ares is someone I really like. He's going to Perth. I don't know about the Dominican, probably Ronnie Simone. He's always playing in the Dominican, so I'm sure he'll be there. But yeah, a couple really good up the middle guys who raised their stock this year and might do so a little bit more this winter in Carson Williams and Chandler Simpson.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Trey Morgan and Xavier Isaac are both hitting to a 950 plus OPS over in the Arizona Fall League. So they're doing some good things too. Xavier Isaac, in spite of his weird peripheral, seems to continue to just produce results. So whatever. And Trey Morgan is having a great Fall League as well. So there's a lot of really exciting things to look at in the minors. I'm excited about Trey Morgan playing in the outfield too, because when you talk about Chandler Simpson as well, I think there are outfield ABs to be had in 2025 for the Rays. There is not a lockdown left fielder at all. It is, I don't want to say open competition, but it probably is, honestly, for that position. It's probably going to be a platoon. You're probably looking at, you know, Josh Lowe's taking most of the right field starts, and you're probably looking at Siri taking most of the center field starts. But when you look at left field, I mean, I think it's with Randy being gone now, that is wide open. So there are, if guys start developing in the minor league level and you continue to see Chandler Simpson improve, we had a lot of questions around what DeLuca, Dylan Carlson can do. We don't know. Well, Palacios, if maybe he plays more second than outfield, we don't know. There are opportunities out there. So if guys like, you know, I don't know that Trey Morgan is really going to be, you know, in the majors in 2025, probably not. But there's going to be opportunities. There is not a shoe-in 100%. This is the left fielder of the future right now necessarily in the Rays system. So there's opportunities out there if they want to start taking them.
Yeah, I really like Trey Morgan's improved defense in left field. He's looked pretty solid out there. In the fall league, the league average OPS I think is like 850 or 875. So,
talk about that.
It's crazy inflated. If you're not hitting like, you know, a home run a game and like you know, 2 to 3 hits every night, like you're not keeping pace with the league. So I'm mostly, you know, interested in the defense that he's shown. He's an impact defender at first, which is weird to say. But you know, he's phenomenal first baseman. But if he can play a competent or better left field with you know, that approach that he has, his bat to ball skills and improving power, that he's, you know, tapped into a little bit, he's a really solid player. But, you know, left field and first base, not, you know, the most valuable profile. So the bat's really going to have to carry. Similar to Xavier Isaac, like, you know, first base DH. I know he's played some outfield. I don't know how much the outfield thing is going to stick. But he underwent a complete body transformation at, like, what, 19 years old. So yeah. Not going to count out anything, but his he hasn't really shown what the kind of improvements I would like to see so far in the fall league. I know he's mashing the ball, but like he's always mashed the ball, but like right. What happens when he can't, you know, do that insane bat wrap anymore against, you know, 93 at the knuckles? Like he's doing great against the guys that are throwing, like, you know, are working on their off speed and their secondary in Arizona right now. They're throwing like an 87 mile an hour cutter, you know, middle away. He's having fun with that, but you know, we'll see how he does against the guys that it can throw some mustard.
Yeah, there's a lots of good stuff out there to watch. If you're not watching Rays minor league baseball in 2025 and in honestly the 2024 offseason, you're missing out. There is fun stuff.
For sure.
There's a lot of fun out there.
I watched maybe 4 innings of the World Series. Like, I've just been watching like random Arizona Fall League games, anything I can keep my hands on. I like the Fall League. That's that and like the Cape Cod those are my favorite times of the year. So
yeah, you talked about an 850 OPS being like the benchmark. It's entertaining baseball. If you like watching hits, watch the Arizona Fall League. The dudes are lighting it up out there. It's enjoyable baseball, to be sure. I did hate watch a little bit of the World Series, especially the last game. I did watch that. That was entertaining. But yeah, I mean, watch Rays minor league baseball. Whatever happens as far as the Rays in 2025 at the major league level, it will be very entertaining to watch at the minor league level. A place that is never minor league is the RBLR shop. Never, ever minor league. Shop.rblrsports.com, where you can get all of the best merch inspired by our favorite Tampa Bay sports teams. If you want to celebrate the Rowdies going up early in the playoffs, absolutely go to shop.rblrsports.com. Get you some Rowdies inspired merch. Use promo code Flappy for 10% off. Promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, 10% off anything you'd want to get on their shop.rblrsports.com.
Yeah, that was the thing popped up the same time you started saying that, so I was like, "Whoa, that's cool."
Yeah, it is cool. The pop up of the ad was significantly better than my lead in. So shout out to Erica on that one. But anyway, we're just gonna completely pretend none of that ever happened. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything? Any other things you really enjoyed this season? Any other news you want to talk about?
No, we ripped on the Yankees, talked about Brandon Lau stuff. Christopher Morel is a fun guy. Mm-hmm. Gary Gilhill and Trevor Harrison, they took a pretty nice step forward too. Those more up the middle minor league stories. I mean, Trevor Harrison, he made his debut this year, but he was phenomenal. So fun draft class too, Canada heavy. Who knows what that means, but yeah.
Love Canada. Big
that's,
Canada
that's
guy.
That's basically it.
Yeah, big Canada guy. Big Canada. I don't know if I don't know what the percentage of our audience has been to Canada, but you should go if you haven't been. Ontario, beautiful place to be. I don't know why we're talking about this, but I just thought it was nice to let everybody know you should go to Canada. They were like okay in the World Baseball Classic. I think they didn't completely wash out. They were okay, so maybe. Sounds good.
Thing in the chat here. Okay. I got to think for a second. Okay, so a guy that we haven't heard of. Also, if anybody listening has questions, throw those in. We're trying to break the world record for viewership here. Guy we haven't heard of, Jonathan Spikel. I just made that name up, so you've never heard of him. I don't know. I got to think of someone. I'm trying to think of who's the most obscure guy I have in my notes app here. Let me see. I do have a notes app where I make my own prospect rankings, unfortunately, because I'm a nerd for that stuff. I'm going to keep stalling. I really think, it's not that nobody's ever heard of him, but Connor, I don't know how to say the last name, but Connor Hushack. I feel like that's not a joke name. I promise that's his real last name. he hit a ball like 110 miles an hour in his pro debut. He was like a seventh round pick. Like,
oh, wow.
Or okay. Maybe 17th round. I don't know. He was really late out of like a mid-major. He hit a ball really, really hard, which like that was kind of cool. So I don't think he'll be that phenomenal in 2025, but it was cool to see that. I was like, oh cool. Wuyol Shin, I think I'm saying that right. Juco guy out of somewhere, I think in Florida or Miami, came over from Korea. I don't, maybe they're like fringe major leaguers at best. Maybe they're good AAA guys, I don't know. It's hard to project those guys when they're just out of the draft and they're such a late round pick. Nate Knowles might be one that would probably more likely hit. He was a raised pick this last draft. Touches mid-90s with the fastball out of William. I think it was William and Mary. So a mid-major guy. Really nice cutter, slutter type thing. Like, I think upper 80s with some two-plane break. So maybe a mid-rotation starter, maybe a bullpen arm. Maybe he never touches the majors. Who knows? Really confident Carson Williams, though, is going to contribute at some point in 2025, maybe right out of the gate.
I would love that. Taylor Walls is very, very good defensively. If you told me that he was going to make less than 100 starts next year, I would probably do a cartwheel if I could find a way. And that somebody better than him was going to take those other 60 or 70. He walks, so good for him. He is pretty good at walking. Relatively speaking, he walks a decent amount. But if we could get some more value defensively or offensively from the shortstop position, that would be that'd be great. And giving Carson Williams the opportunity to develop at the major league level would be something really, really fun to watch in 2025. So that is now you've convinced me that that's a possibility. I'm going to be very aggressively rooting for that for the entire offseason going into spring training. Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen, but it also wouldn't be the craziest thing ever if it did because of what they're doing right now. So, just interested to see how that tournament starts. And I think we're going to get StatCast for all of it because I think all the games are going to be played at major league stadiums, which is also a good experience for the players because you get that atmosphere. They're playing in front of crowds that are like maybe a couple thousand most of the time in those lower levels of the minors. Yeah, so, they're also going to be playing with veterans. I know Rich Hill is on the team, is on Team USA. So it's just nice to have those kinds of experiences, even if it doesn't, you know, end up impacting his on the field development too much in the short term. It's just, you know, a good learning experience for a guy that's relatively new at baseball. I think he was a volleyball player for a while. He just stopped doing the two-way thing when he got drafted. So got a cannon of an arm. Just excited for that experience for him. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. You know what else has been pretty cool? This show. Had a really fun time talking Rays baseball. We're going to keep doing this all off season long. If you enjoyed, do us a huge favor and follow. If you enjoyed what you saw here today, that'll let you know whenever we're going live, whenever we're posting in the future. If you have a comment, if something we said disagreed with, or if you want to just say, hey, I really like Hoomstepper in the minor leagues and you want us to talk about him, drop it in the comments. Shoot us a DM. Comment on social media. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'd love to know what you want to hear about this offseason because we've got our ideas about what we want to talk about. But if there's something you want to hear us talk about this offseason, let us know in the comments. Let us know on social media. We'd love to hear from you guys because we're out here to make the best Rays show we can make. And that's what we're going to do all offseason long. This is the first show officially of the off season because the World Series is over. So it's going to be a long off season, but it's going to be a fun one. We're going to have a lot to talk about. Ben, you got anything else before we wrap up?
I thought it'd be really funny if I plugged my social security number, but I won't do that. if my dad's listening, he'll probably get mad at me, and also somebody would steal my identity. But I'll give everybody a hint. It starts 287, fill in the rest. If you can get my social security number, I won't call Experian. So I'm feeling impulsive today.
Feeling impulsive. Okay. I feel like we should go before Ben's identity gets stolen. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today, for stopping in and watching. We'll see you all off season. But for now, raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.